Last talk is Intrafraction Target Beam Positioning by Paul Keel.
Thanks, Gig. And I was charged with looking at what happens if we are getting information during the treatment and how can we respond to those changes. And just to, as both an acknowledgement and disclosure of the potential conflicts of interest and research support. So one thing I wanted to look at was really understand that the separation of the two processes, if we are monitoring position during treatment, that there's a position estimation part and the actual response or the use of that information in guiding the beam to respond to this change in position. And also to look at the advantages and disadvantages of several systems for both beam positioning and position monitoring. And because of the we're a bit shorter time, we're just going to briefly mention some of the systems that are available for position monitoring and beam tracking. So why are we going to look for the, why are we going to correct for these changes? And I think in, there are many systems causing motion in the body. I think we see intrafraction motion in all cases, unless the, you've got a frame bolted to the skull and the frame, and the same frame bolted to the couch. And in all other sites, intrafraction motion is present, and hence the need for spatiotemporal adaptation during treatment. And the magnitude of the motion is variable, often small, probably often negligible, but also unpredictable. So an example here for just lung tumor motion, just an example trace, what we see is that this is the three plots of the left-right motion, AP motion, and SI motion as a function of time. This was from a taken from a CyberKnife system. So we see that the respiration magnitude changes with time. We see that the respiration period changes with time, and also there's a drift in the signal as well. And so the systems we're, what we're dealing with are non-stationary signals. And I think this is a case similar that David's seen as some substantial changes in intrafraction position during treatment. And this is, we have a single fraction protocol for non-small cell lung cancer and metastases, which 25 gray, there's a 100% response, local control for T1. Lesions. And for this particular case, using gated IMRT with cone beam CT guidance, we're seeing drift during the treatment. Drift during the treatment, initial cone beam CT scan was taken. This is not a 4D cone beam CT, so what we're seeing, these effects aren't due to respiration on cycle-to-cycle variations. We noticed we've got strict requirements that the both the soft tissue and the skeletal anatomy should match the initial CT scan, not just targeting soft tissue. And so it was noticed there was a difference in the position, and so there was a change in pressure. This person was in a vacuoloc bag, and at that time a 10 millimeter shift was seen after the change in pressure at 13 minutes into the treatment. 36 minutes into the treatment, after a couple of beams were delivered, there was a cone beam CT scan was acquired again and noticed an 18 millimeter drift near the end of treatment. Near the end of treatment, at 1 hour into the treatment, another scan was taken, seeing a 28 millimeter difference from the start of treatment. And this is for, we're only giving one fraction, so there's essentially no room for error. And you know, this is one of the cases we've seen what the population is. I think we've we need to get more data to see how frequently this is occurring, but it is occurring, and we'd like to have methods to manage this motion. And it's not just, of course, lungs that move. Some interesting data from MD Anderson, Orlando, recently published in the Red Journal, looking at the prostate motion. Of course, in some cases, the prostate does not move. In some cases, seeing sort of continuous drifts with time. In some cases, seeing sort of drifts over a short period of time. and other cases some quite irregular motion. And so, you know, if we can monitor this motion during treatment and then act on it, it's going to increase the treatment accuracy. So looking at target position estimation and beam repositioning as separate processes, there's a lot of, just to separate, a lot of choices between what we're going to use for to monitor where the target is as a function of time and how we actually act on that information and respond to the motion. So there are a number of different position devices and that can be coupled to different motion compensation strategies. So, and really these are the two systems can be decoupled. Of course, integrating the systems is often non-trivial. There's a lot of effects that need to be taken into account. These are all control loops. So, and what do we have with which we can monitor position in an interfraction basis? There's optical monitoring of the surface, which has got some, which does not provide information about internal targets, but is essential. It doesn't add radiation dose and gives information at least about some part of the anatomy. There's X-ray methods, ultrasound, MRI, spirometer, EPID, electromagnetic, and also combinations of different positioning devices, which are also in use. So I'll just take an example of one of these that just happens to be what we're working on, though there are others, is looking at combining a single X-ray and optical imaging for target estimation. And why look at a single X-ray imager with optical monitoring, and that it's quite an available technology in the treatment in many systems today? And it's also, I think, applicable to systems which have multiple images. In some cases, the gantry is in the way of one of the images. So, and you also may not need, if you have two images, you don't necessarily need to use them synchronously in terms of dose reduction as well. So, again, if we have two information streams, then we can combine these and take account that if we're just using one, you're not supposed to try and read this slide, that if we've just got one imager, then we're really not getting any information at the point in time about where, how far the object is from the imager, but we do have prior information from previous times about where that object was. So if we use the prior information, we can quite effectively combine these two to get a reasonable estimate of where the target is with time. And these are at the moment just simulations in each of the three dimensions, where the blue data is the position this is data from the CyberKnife system, and the red is the estimate of just using a single X-ray combined with an optical imager to drive the process. And we're getting some information about where the target is with time, then there are several decisions we can make. We can just choose to monitor that information passively. We can choose to gate that information, and that if the motion exceeds a certain threshold, that we will stop. Or we can dynamically act on that situation, on that information. And if we dynamically act on that, then we've got several different options as well with which to choose. Either we can to align the tumor and the beam. We can choose either robotic means. We can move the couch. We can move the block, which has been implemented clinically in Japan, one institution, or move the MLC. So we have different options with which to realign the beam and the patient. And a lot of just an example, there are several options. One example that we're working on is MLC-based tracking. And so what we're trying to do, and what all the systems have in common, is getting some information about the patient, about the target position, and then acting on that information, doing some processing, integrating the current information with the treatment plan to affect, in real time, a change in either the beam position or the patient position. And so the approach that we have with an MLC is shown here, that getting the information from the plan, and then also updating the information, that the radiation field that we want to deliver with the change, with the information that we're getting in real time in the different directions of motion, so to account for translation, and also potentially rotation or deformation if we consider each leaf motor, each leaf as essentially a degree of freedom for the problem. And then we have to take some other practicalities into account. And does this work? And at least in a lab system, it's shown that what we're seeing here is the tracking an object, so there's no assumption about what the a priori motion is. The green circle in the center should be matching the pink circle. And if there was a system lag, and there's in all of these systems there is a lag, we can account for that using prediction algorithms, and with that we can get quite good accuracy and a sub-millimeter accuracy in the target position, as shown. I won't go into detail in this, but just to summarize, that there is intrafraction motion from a variety of sources that we have during treatment. The target position estimation systems can approach 1 millimeter in accuracy, and there's an asterisk there. Of course, these are most of the systems available are using surrogates such as markers, so at least we know where the markers are, not necessarily where the tumor is. And beam positioning systems, I think the robotic systems can, and in-house data, that the systems, at least geometrically, can approach 1 millimeter in accuracy. I don't want to mean that implies we can have 2 millimeter margins because of all of the issues that the previous speakers have brought up. But I do think that, you know, monitoring what is happening during treatment and responding to that is a paradigm that we're likely to see a lot more of clinically in the future. Thank you.